Chapter 12. Rebellion. 999.M30, the Iron Blood Gugan System. The week after the Harud migrated from Gugan, the fleet waited vainly for its master's command. Perturabo gave no orders. He closeted himself away in his command chamber alone. No gathering of warsmiths was called, no edicts offered. It was left to the warsmiths and the captains of the Iron Warriors to begin regathering the scattered forces of the 125th Expeditionary Fleet. Their task was thankless and complex. Solar flares troubled the battered fleet for hours after the departure of the Harud, rendering communication nigh on impossible. Messages were reduced to pulsed laser signals. Multiple ships had their shields overwhelmed by the constant torrent of energy pouring from the damaged sun, and three of those took further damage that crippled them. The critical nature of this damage necessitated the diversion of other vessels to put the crippled ships under tow, or, in the worst cases, facilitate their evacuation. These operations strained relations between the warsmiths in command of the various grand battalions, further complicating matters. All the Iron Warriors' logistical expertise was required to reform their battle group. But slowly the fleet regathered, and such repairs as could be made without orbital facilities were begun. It was Forex, first captain, to whom responsibility fell. 3 standard Terran days went by without any sign of the Primarch, and all attempts to contact him were unsuccessful. The doors to the command chamber remained sealed. Forex ordered the fleet towards the Gravipores between Gugan and its nearest sibling. He had scout ships scour every world. They all reported the same thing. Empty warrens beneath the honeycombed landmasses, containing nothing but the fetid rags of dead Xenos. The Harud had deserted the system completely. Astropathic messages came in from subdivisions of the fleet in nearby systems. Several were also devoid of the Harud, though in others the Xenos presence persisted. Lacking guidance, Forex drew plans up for their extermination with his fellow Triarchs, Harkor and Golg. It was therefore to everyone's great surprise when Perturabo emerged from his sanctum unannounced and attended the Dodecatheon, the legionary order drawn from Olympia's ancient clandestine society of masons. Forex, Golg, and Harkor were pacing the long triumphal way that ran up to the base of the Iron Blood's ram. In contrast to the rest of the prow, which was crammed with lance batteries, torpedo tubes, and all the many systems that made them function, the open space of the Mason's Hall seemed an indulgence, but it too had a purpose. The tall buttressing that crossed the space was angled slightly towards the prow. The rib vaulting increased the strength of the ship abeam. Beyond the forward wall were the ram's shock halls, housing pistons the size of escort ships, whose sleeves were filled with lakes of hydraulic fluid. The whole of the Mason's Hall was nothing more than an elaborate crumple zone for the Iron Blood. It was fitting, Forex had always thought, that the Brotherhood of Stone should meet there, for the Dodecatheon served a similar purpose for the Legion, a place where rivalries could clash and inflict minimal damage on the whole. The Triarchs wore their full armour burnished to an oily sheen. Many of the other warsmiths and captains present were dressed in robes of Hessian, decorated with chainmail patches over their body gloves. But Forex believed that a Triarch should always appear ready for war. Strategy boards occupied much of the hall space. These were thronged by Iron Warriors arguing how best to represent the Harud in their simulated battles. Their recent setbacks had exercised their minds as much as their anger, and ambitious warsmiths could see the glory to be won if they concocted a winning strategy. In truth, all warsmiths were ambitious, and they all had different ideas. In the first place, they could not agree how best to test their theories. Those that favoured the purity of woodblock formations and outcomes decided by the casting of 10-sided dice argued bitterly with the proponents of cogitator-assisted hololith battle simulators. They, in turn, nearly came to blows with those who insisted that the Harud's unpredictability could only be modelled by savant brains deliberately altered to be insane, then linked in complex series. The followers of the Brethren of Thunder, the so-called burned men, gathered there also, putting forward their ideas for novel weapons tailored to defeat the Xenos. Their suggestions generated more discussion, as various warsmiths supported or rubbished their proposals as either inspired genius or completely unworkable.
"Things appear to be returning to normal," said Harcourt.
"Do not be deceived," said Forex.
He could see the aggression building there. Words were sharper than usual.
"And they are frustrated. Their arguments could turn ugly."
"There is tension here," agreed Golg. "But what of it? It is healthy. That is what this order is for."
"Listen to Erasmus. What do you expect, Forex?" said Harcourt. "This campaign has cost us 1/5 of our strength. Our brothers argue their case not to secure advancement, but to ensure our survival. They're bound to be a little headstrong."
"Well, there you are," said Forex. "And that is not normal. Look at them, bickering over their rules. It is distracting them from the true nature of the problem. Nothing will be normal until we are out of this subsector and fighting things that remain anchored in time."
Harcourt chuckled.
"Really, Forex? A few minor setbacks with this Xenos race and you start braying doom like a cheap soothsayer."
Forex rounded on Harcourt.
"I don't call 30,000 dead legionaries minor setbacks, brother." "There are more. There are always more," replied Harcourt dismissively. "The supply fleet is due in from the Meritara cluster soon. In the holds of its ships will be recruits from our holdings and home. Grist to the mill of war. The Harrod are slippery, I agree, but even they must stand upon stone. When we take the metal to it and cut it away, they will fall like any other foe."
Forex turned his attention to an ongoing tactical simulation. Iron Warrior's Grand Battalions assaulted a fixed installation in standard battle array, an encircling contravallation, field bastions for their artillery, brothers manning trenches and waiting for the call to assault.
"There are 15 major Harrod worlds in the deeps, and 84 minor," he said. "Excluding those they have abandoned, we have taken 3. Even you must see the numbers do not add up. We are several 100,000 warriors short."
The captain playing the Harrod unexpectedly deployed a skirmishing unit behind a battery of Manticore missile launchers. They were swept from existence. Before the action was over, an entire grand company of Iron Warriors had been removed from the table. The wooden blocks representing them dropped without ceremony into a blackened steel box.
"And they're running, not fighting. What will happen, do you think, when we finally corner them?" said Forex.
Golg grinned for reasons that eluded Forex. He was a cold man, aloof from the Dodecatheon and every other organization. His rank of captain, while being elevated to the status of Triarch, had not endeared him to the higher warsmiths. Harcourt waved his hand.
"We are iron. We will not be blunted. These are..."
"Hush," said Forex. Conversation in the hall died like a ripple of wind across grass.
"The Primarch,"
someone said.
"Perturabo's here,"
called someone else. Knots of Iron Warriors in the hall's aisle pulled themselves aside. Perturabo walked down between tables, trading nods with warriors that greeted him. The atmosphere of the hall changed. The Space Marines' spirits lifted as their lord rejoined them. A chant rose, accompanied by the stamp of heavy boots on the deck plating.
"Iron within! Iron without! Iron within! Iron without!"
The chanting ceased when Perturabo came to a halt by his triarchs. The three warsmiths clashed their forearms on their armour.
"It is good to see you again, my lord," said Forex.
His pleasure was tainted by worry. The Primarch was drawn and tired-looking. But when he smiled at his sons in his awkward way, it was almost enough to put Forex at ease.
"First Captain, you have performed commendably," said Perturabo.
Forex bowed his head in gratitude.
"We are bound for the Gravipause?"
Perturabo asked.
"Oh, yes, my lord. I intended to hold there until we have your orders, and wait for the arrival of the resupply fleet."
"A good place as well to stage an emergency warp jump," said Perturabo.
His smile changed in character. A feral edge came to it. Forex answered carefully.
An option I had not considered, my lord, he lied. The campaign is not done.
Harkor made a disparaging noise. Perturabo ignored it and looked around the room, his face open.
Come, my warriors, he said. Do not stop in your discussions. It is a sad day when the Dodecatheon is silent. I see industry here that should continue. Who will impress me by devising the best strategy against the Harud? Do not let my presence put you off.
Slowly, conversation crept back out of the silence. With an initial animal furtiveness, it grew in volume and tempo, until much in the hall was as it had been before the Primarch's arrival. Perturabo's smile dropped.
When is the resupply fleet due? He asked the Triarchs.
Soon, my lord, said Harkor silkily. 5,000 new recruits, at least, as well as new armoured units, new auxiliary...
I am aware of what it brings, interrupted Perturabo. What I do not know is when we will have it.
Forex cleared his throat.
I expect it any day now. We shall know for certain soon. I have re-established astropathic communication with the subfleets in the surrounding systems. Longer-range communication is still problematic, but our astropaths report the disturbances to real space are declining now that the Harud have departed. And we should be able to make good contact soon, provided we remain in Gugan and do not venture on to other Harud-held systems.
Perturabo nodded absent-mindedly, his great jaw working on nothing. The haunted look returned.
We should consult. This campaign has to end.
As you desire, my lord, said Golg.
Perturabo beckoned them to a hololithic chart desk, being used as a battle simulator. The warsmiths there wordlessly deactivated their programs and departed, leaving the display field dusty white. Perturabo summoned an image into life.
Display full cartolithic view of Sactrada Deeps. Overlay my cartographs. Date stamp 432.
The table buzzed. A starscape blinked into life and out again, then stabilized, showing the isolated 100 stars of the Sactrada Deeps. Black void circled it. The map was at such a scale that the nearest inhabited imperial world was not visible. At the bottom, a ragged double line of stars trailed from the cluster. The Vulpa Straits, so ineffectively held by Dantioch. Harud-inhabited systems were circled in red. Sinuous arrows came from the dozen stars at the formation's center, where most of the signified planets were located. The migration tracks of the Harud.
I have not been idle while I have been away from you, my sons, but have spent my time composing this map.
There was no explanation beyond that for his destabilizing absence, and certainly no apology. There never was from the Lord of Iron.
We have provoked the Harud into a major migration. If it continues at this rate, then the deeps will be empty of the Xenos within 6 months. Although this will technically clear this area of the galaxy of these creatures, I cannot think it was what the Emperor desired when he gave us our orders.
Golg smiled widely at Perturabo's flat jest. Harkor and Forex remained stony-faced.
Though Dantioch was craven in desire for withdrawal and incompetent in his defence of the fortress worlds we had established in the Straits, he was correct in one regard.
Perturabo pinched his fingers together, then spread them wide within the projection. The hololith zoomed out smoothly. The Sactrada Deeps became a single fuzzy ball of light like a malformed star. The Orion Cygnus arm, itself an isolated piece of the galaxy, shimmered and suddenly speckled with the blue-ringed signifiers of Imperial-held systems. Projected tracks of the Harud migration painted themselves over the top.
The nearest Imperial holding is 23 light-years away, said Perturabo,
pointing at a star labelled as Haldos.
From my observations of the Harud's unusual mode of transit, I calculate that they will hit the Cadamus and Haldos systems and the worlds of Birgitta, Josclaim, and Magna Aphrodite inside a month. If they head further, they will come nigh to the Red Scar and Sanguinius's homeworld of Baal.
Well, then let the angels deal with them,
said Golg. Perturabo silenced him with a look.
There are four main migratory routes that I've been able to plot. The other three will most likely head away into the outer rim of the Ultima Segmentum, where they will disperse and cause minimal damage to Imperial territory. However, our orders were to destroy them.
And destroy them we shall.
He gestured again. The table emitted a puff of static-scented gas and shifted its view.
The Vulpa Straits. Large numbers of Harad have passed this way. According to Dantioch, unlike the ones we faced here, those Harad he encountered fought only if confronted, at least until the last days when they appeared in greater numbers. Even then, many appeared to be, if we can use the term for these beings, non-combatants. They are using the straits to escape, probably for the same reasons I wished them to be held. They offer a stable route from the deeps. If we were to block the migrant flock's egress here, here, and here...
Red bars blinked into existence, each labelled with the code name of a battle group.
Then they will be forced into the path of least resistance here.
The Vulpa Straits blinked, and the representations of the Harad swarms funneled themselves into that single corridor of space.
We have no worlds there, thanks to Dantioch's incompetence, but that may work to our advantage. The Harad will not be expecting resistance.
Perturabo became animated.
If we were to use a larger-scale version of the stasis traps we employed on...
A trilling fanfare interrupted Perturabo's argument. The warsmiths looked around to find a nervous mortal officer walking hesitantly toward the Primarch, a herald cherub flitting overhead.
Why do you come in here?
Demanded Harkor, moving round the table to confront the man.
This place is forbidden to mortals.
I'm sorry, my lord. I was ordered to come. This is an urgent matter that demands the Primarch's attention.
What matter?
Perturabo did not look at the man, occupied as he was by his war plan. The officer swallowed nervously.
My lord, we have the resupply flotilla on an inward trajectory.
Why inform me of this information?
Said the Primarch tersely.
Do I not have a legion of experts to deal with such matters?
Harkor smiled unpleasantly at the mortal. There was a long pause.
We are struggling with communications and long-range AuSpex readings, said the officer in a rush. But there appears to be only a single ship.
Perturabo's attention was finally yanked from the table.
One ship.
His shadow fell across the shaking officer. His fists clenched, and the officer flinched.
Yes, my lord.
Do you know which it is?
No, my lord.
Then find out,
the Primarch growled.
Now!
Falling over his own feet, the officer fled the Dodecatheon.
What now?
Perturabo said to himself.
Brothers!
He shouted. The assembled warsmiths turned from their games and discussions.
Within this table is my latest strategy. Look over it. Test it to destruction. I want a workable plan to avoid a repetition of this debacle before I return. Trident with me.
Harkor, Forex, and Golg left the table and fell in with their lord. Perturabo desired to exercise his legs, as was his habit after his periods of seclusion. Invariably, he worked intensely in those times and moved little from his drafting table. They avoided the crew trains running the length of the vessel and instead walked the miles to the command deck in silence. Once Harkor opened his mouth to say something, but Perturabo silenced him with a threatening glare. The officers of the command deck behaved like men condemned. Quiet orders issued from mouths tight with stress. Pale faces glowed with the sickly reflected light of gel screens. Eyes stole furtively to the Lord of Iron as he paced onto the deck, but none dared look at him for long. His fury boiled off him. His hunched body creaked with violence that the slightest mistake could unleash. Perturabo went to stand by the empty shipmaster's throne. Its mechanisms had been opened and cleaned, awaiting its next occupant. No one knew yet who would be granted that dubious honour.
A report, said the Primarch.
The officer of the watch nodded. The mortals on the deck moved cringingly under the guns of their space marine masters, and he was no different. He managed to look the Primarch in the eye for half a second, delivering the rest of his news to a patch of floor at Perturabo's feet.
It is the Androcles, my lord. They made contact a minute ago.
Where is the rest of the resupply fleet?
The officer buckled under Perturabo's seething rage.
My lord, I...
Answer me!
Bellowed Perturabo. He lowered his head to the officer's level, his spittle flecking the man's face. He was a monstrous bull ready to charge.
You have opened communications, I assume?
Yes, my lord,
said the officer of the watch. Perturabo looked round at his cowering servants.
Then open me a hololith channel to her commander immediately. What has happened to you? Have you all taken leave of your senses? Must I do everything myself?
The officer shook. He had to swallow three times before he could continue speaking.
My lord, Captain Thersuga is on his way here by fast lighter, running ahead of the Androcles. He has news that he wishes to deliver in person.
From the look of you, said Perturabo to the deck, you are all aware of the information that the captain would impart. Report it to me.
My lord, I
stuttered the captain. Perturabo seized the officer of the watch by both shoulders and hauled him off his feet.
Tell me!
A dark stain spread across the officer's groin. Three drops of liquid splashed onto the floor.
It is Olympia,
he said in a small, terrified voice.
It has rebelled against the light of the Emperor.
The expression on Perturabo's face would have been comical under any other circumstances. The colour drained from his flesh, his eyes widened to childlike proportions, his features went slack in disbelief. No one had ever seen the Lord of Iron so. All his certainties were washed away like footings of sand in a flood, and his arrogance collapsed like a castle built on top.
I'm sorry, my lord,
said the officer. Red flushed Perturabo's cheeks, his forehead blotched, his mouth twisted into a bestial snarl. With a roar, he gripped the officer of the watch. The man screamed as his shoulders shattered under the pressure. Keeping one hand on the man's shoulder, Perturabo grabbed his hip and lifted the hapless officer up high, raised his own leg, and brought the man's back down hard on his armored knee, breaking it like a stick. He threw the dead man down and looked around wildly, as if he would see the solution to his predicament hiding in the corner. He fell into a crouch, the posture of a half-man about to strike. The bearing of a noble Primarch left him, and the light of insanity danced behind his eyes. The Iron Warrior's hands tightened involuntarily on their guns. Golg took cautious steps back. Harkor looked over his shoulder for an avenue of escape. Forex stood paralyzed. Every man and woman on the command deck stopped dead, tasks forgotten. Only the servitors worked on, mindlessly burbling status reports or action queries. Tension built unbearably. Worse than an approaching storm. They were like meat beasts trapped in the cage of a raging amble. Not one among them expected to leave alive. Their looks of fear and the reactions of his sons cleared Perturabo's mind. For a moment he considered flying into them and killing them all. The rational part of him that he had spent so many years cultivating teetered on the brink of destruction, but then recovered. He could not drown the shame this news brought in blood. His rage passed, a thunderhead rolling away without delivering the promised rain. He sagged. The dead officer's terrified face stared up from the deck. Perturabo stared back, lost for words. An awful, sucking ache pulsed in his chest, as if his hearts had been removed and replaced with nothingness. Disbelief and shame threatened to destroy him. He screwed his eyes shut.
Inform me when Captain Thersuga lands, he said quietly. I will receive him in my command chamber alone.
He turned to go, head bowed. He stopped and looked back at his communications officers.
Tell him he has nothing to fear.